We're continuing our series on justice. Hopefully you've been following the sermons we've had. We've looked at some big ideas around justice, what justice means, who the marginalised are. We focused in a bit last week on what it meant to give. What does it mean to be just in our giving? And today's topic is to do with justice and food, which may seem, I don't know, unusual, or like the two are on two different very levels. Justice is a big kind of world-encompassing thing, and food is just a mundane day-to-day thing that perhaps you don't think about much. Maybe you don't even like thinking about it. You know, it's a hassle to have to think about food. What am I going to eat tonight? What am I going to cook tomorrow? All that kind of stuff. But we've seen, I think, just in recent months, how food and justice work together, how they go together, how food poverty is a thing. And that when you think about people being marginalized, when you think about poverty, you do have to, on some level, think about food. Marcus Rashford, the footballer, of course, has been hassling people in power with this question of what do we do about child food poverty and free school meals. Of course, for certain households, you get that in this country, because it's a way of ensuring that children are being fed, which is not necessarily something you can guarantee in some households because of poverty and other situations. So we've seen that poverty and justice and these big issues actually do tie in with the question of food. And it can be a bit difficult, I think, at times to see how that necessarily affects us. And like most of the things we've been talking about, most of the ways that we've been talking about justice over the past few weeks, it comes down to the way we think about something. It comes down to an attitude. And if we get our attitude and our thinking right about things, and a lot of the practical issues of what do we do, how do we do this well, how do we handle it, those kind of fall into place. So once again, with this sermon, I'll be thinking about some of ways of thinking about food. Now, the first thing I think we need to be aware of is that food is not, you know, a luxury. It's an essential thing. We all need food to eat. So when food is unfairly distributed, or there's an access issue for some people because of poverty, it becomes a justice issue. Is it just that some of us eat very, very well indeed, far more than we need to eat, and others struggle to eat at all? And of course, as I said, food is essential. We need food to live. If oxygen was unfairly distributed around the world, You'd probably ask questions about that. You think, is that right? What can we do about this? And food, like oxygen, is an essential thing. So I think it's right to be asking these questions and to be asking ourselves, what is our attitude towards food? And what is our attitude towards food and justice? Do we take it for granted? Because it's something that many of us just have regularly on a day-to-day basis. As much as we need, as much as we want, more than we need, more than we want. And we, of course, Christmas was not long ago, and Christmas is a time of the year where we may feel, certainly I do, I don't feel quite so worried about whether I'm being disciplined or food issues. It's a time where it's socially acceptable to have plenty of food and to eat more than you need. And we need to think about food, we need to think about justice, we need to think about things like this. And so the good place to start, the place where we always want to go in times like this, is the Bible. What's the Bible say? And interestingly enough, food is a theme that crops up repeatedly throughout the Bible. It seems to be mentioned all the time, and it seems to be mentioned with regards to spirituality very frequently. Now, I can't take much credit for some of the things I say this morning. Nicole, one of our staff team here, our children and student worker on our staff here, she is an expert on this topic. She's very fascinated with the topic of food and spirituality, and she prepared a talk, a theology session that we do for our interns. And I'll confess, you know, I got sent a copy of some of her notes on this. So if you've got questions after this, go and ask Nicole, because she's the expert on this. I'm just using some of her notes to help. One of the ways in which her notes were helpful is she identifies how often food comes up in the Bible in terms of not just, you know, oh, here's some food or there's some food, but tying it with our spiritual well-being as humans. It's mentioned in a lot of different contexts, and I wonder if that's because it is such an essential, foundational thing for our existence, that whether it's a way of God saying in his word, look, our spirituality should be a foundational, essential thing for our existence. And by sort of tying it together with food, it gets across the idea that God should impact the very mundane things of our existence, not just, you know, those great occasions. Maybe we'll go to a church on Sundays or a big event every couple of times a year, you know, and that's where God is. No, God should be like food to us. He should be present with us every day. We need him for our existence every day. And I wonder if food is used and mentioned so frequently in the Bible as a sort of analogy or tied in with our spirituality, precisely because God is trying to get across this message that our spirituality is tied with our day-to-day existence, and it should be something we think about every day. And in fact, our attitude to food, our attitude to the very mundane things in our life, reveals our heart, it reveals our spirituality. So, for example, one of those situations where food is tied in a way you might not expect, that from the very beginning of the story, when we are created and Adam and Eve are created and God is speaking and so on, he gives them commands. And what is their command? What are the commands that God gives them? It's to do with food. He talks to them about cultivating the land. He says, this is what you can eat, this is what you don't eat. And their obedience and their relationship with God is tied up with these commands about food. God doesn't come to them and say, look, you know, these are the laws I'm going to give you to make you a good person. Don't tell lies, don't steal, all those kind of things. He comes and just says to them, look, this is what you need to do with the land. This is what you can eat, and this is what you shouldn't eat. And that is what their spirituality is kind of bound up in. It's about whether or not they obey God's commands about what they eat. And when they fail in that situation, when they sin, when they say, I don't think God can be trusted, and they eat the things they're not supposed to eat, there's a consequence to that sin in their relationship with God, their relationship with one another, and their relationship with creation. And it's interesting to know that one of the things that God says, look, this is a consequence, this is a punishment, this is something that happens because you've been disobedient, is God says, you know what, now it's going to be harder to eat. It's going to be harder to get your food. Genesis 3, 17 to 19 says, you know, now that you're going to have to really work the ground to get your food. So once again, there's sort of our spiritual existence is related to food. Our punishment, if you like, the consequence of our sin, if you like, is that now food is harder to obtain. We have to work harder for those essential daily things that we need. In Genesis, there's a story that many of you will know about Joseph and his technicolor dream coat. And it's interesting to note in that there's kind of a transition in Egypt. Again, it sort of hinting at this idea that Egypt became was at first it was a place of refuge for the people of God. Then over the years, as we see as we go into the Exodus, it became the oppressors of the people of God. The Israelites were put into slavery, and it's interesting to note that one of the things that happens, you may know the story about Joseph and his dreams, and there's a famine in Egypt, and Pharaoh has dreams about it, but he doesn't know it's about the famine. And Joseph interprets the dreams and says, this is going to be, you know, 7 good years and 7 years of famine and all that. And Pharaoh appoints Joseph to help manage the country through the times of plenty, the times of famine. And one of the things that Joseph said is, look, get people to give you, Pharaoh, a fifth of all that they produce, so you can store it, and then we'll have plenty of food during the famine. And that's what they do. And Pharaoh gets a fifth of everything that's produced. But as it goes on and the famine goes on, we read by Genesis 47, we read that people are so poor and so hungry that Pharaoh actually buys their land off them. And instead of, you know, them owning their land and producing the food and giving a fifth to Pharaoh, we read about how suddenly Pharaoh owns all the land and he gives the people a fifth of what he produces, and the kind of the tables have turned, and suddenly food, instead of, you know, the Pharaoh saying give me some of your food for the good of the nation, suddenly Pharaoh owns all the thing and all the food and all the land, and he kind of says, now I will give to you a little bit from all that I own to feed you. And it's kind of this transition, it seems, from Pharaoh suddenly becoming this all-powerful, oppressive figure, and this is expressed through the fact that he dominates and owns all the food. So again, in the Old Testament, food is kind of this image of our spirituality or our attitude. What we do with food says a lot about who we are as people. And it's not all negative, though. Food is not all sort of negatively portrayed in the Old Testament. It's very positively portrayed in some light. So the prophets often speak of, you know, God's blessing being in having enough to eat, having plenty of food. And in Isaiah 25, 6 to 8, you see that salvation, the image of salvation, is likened to being in a banquet, this salvation banquet, that, you know, being saved is like having plenty of food, having a feast, having a party with God. And this idea carries through into the New Testament. It's kind of one of the images that Jesus uses, this messianic feast, this banquet, that the kingdom of God is like a banquet, it's like a feast, again, to do with food, and being well fed and being plentiful and having food is seen as the presence of the kingdom of God. Of course, one of Jesus's miracles is the feeding of the 5,000, a story which, again, some of you will know well. The idea that when God is present, people have enough, there is plenty for them to eat. And this is kind of this idea of God's blessing tying in with there being food, there being plenty of food. And of course, food and Jesus, those are not two words you may necessarily think go together, but they do. Food and Jesus. Jesus is often using meals as areas for teaching. He often is involved with food. After his resurrection, the people, the risen Jesus meets with some of his disciples. One of the times he meets with them, they're on the road, the two on the road to Emmaus, and he walks with them and they don't recognize him, and they talk about what's going on, and they stop, and then they sit down together and they recognize him when he breaks the bread. And there's been a lot written, a lot said about the symbolism of this and what this means. But the fact is, Jesus sits down and shares food with these disciples, and it's as they're sharing food that they see who he is. And of course, another story about the risen Jesus meeting the disciples on the beach, or one where the disciples say, come on, let's go fishing. Peter's kind of fed up with hiding around. Let's go fishing. And while they go fishing, they see Jesus, and Peter jumps off out of the boat, sort of before they even got shore, to run to be with Jesus. And quite interesting. And what Jesus does with them is he eats with them. They cook fish and eat together. So Jesus and food, there's all kinds of references in the New Testament, in Jesus's ministry, to food and its place in the kingdom of God. And as I said earlier, I wonder if one of the reasons why this is such an ever-present theme is because God is trying to draw attention to these two ideas, that our spirituality is like food. Our relationship with God is like food. It's tied in with our day-to-day existence. And the second thing is what we do in the day-to-day, what we do in those little things, what we do with our food says what we believe about who God is and our role in the kingdom. And it reveals who we are. And I wonder if that's one of the reasons why food is so prevalent in the Bible and such an issue. And it's quite an interesting one for me. I enjoy my food. I have a sweet tooth. And I like food. When I was young, I had a fantastic metabolism, which meant I ate whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, and I was still scrawny and a scrawny beanpole. But my metabolism's slowing down, and I'm trying to catch up, really. I'm trying to let go of some of those habits of the past because my body's not on the same page anymore as my taste buds. And it's a little bit frustrating. And it's helpful for me to be reminded that food is actually almost an expression of my spirituality. My relationship with food says something about my relationship with God. And not just that when I need to think about what my attitude to food says about my attitude to justice, whether there are issues concerning greed, gluttony, whether there are issues concerning an inability to trust, whether there are issues concerning going to food instead of going to God when, things are difficult or when I'm under stress. All these are spiritual issues, spiritual things we need to think about. And we're thinking particularly about justice. But again, our attitude to food in the day-to-day reveals our attitude towards justice. Justice is a biblical theme. I hope you're aware of that now after, what are we? This is the fourth sermon in the series. And as we've been thinking, as we've sort of come out of these sermons already, is justice is about an attitude. It's about our attitude towards things and people. And we think about things like poverty and our day-to-day experience about that. That includes how we think about food in the day-to-day. Our day-to-day thinking and experience of food is a justice issue. And ensuring that there is food justice, that people do not lack food, is one of the things that the early church was very concerned about. Oz quoted it last week in the sermon about generosity. And it's very relevant for this as well. One of the things James says is, suppose that a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food, so they have no food. If one of you says to him, go, I wish you well, keep warm and well fed, what good is that, without doing anything about their physical needs, what good is that, says James? That if there are those amongst you who do not have food, an expression of your spirituality and your faith is to do something about it, is to feed them. And the early church took this seriously. In Acts, we read about how, in the early chapters of Acts, we read about how there was food injustice, that the widows were provided because widows had no one to provide for them. The community, the Christian community, the church was providing for the widows amongst them, and there was an act of food injustice where the Jewish widows, it seemed, were being in favoured treatment over the Gentile widows when it came to distributing the food. And the leaders of the church say, look, we need to deal with this. We're too busy to deal with this situation, but this matter of food injustice cannot be allowed to remain. So they appoint deacons to make sure that, to oversee this, make sure that the food is fairly distributed, that there is justice in food. So this idea of food, this idea of justice, is throughout the Bible, again into the early church. This is a thing that they are concerned with, ensuring that the food is distributed fairly. And we kind of have no excuse, really, to say, well, I'm not really too concerned about food. Food is nothing to do with the kingdom of God. Food is nothing. How I treat food is my business. It's nothing to do with my expression of my faith. It actually is. How you treat food and what you do about sort of this issue of poverty says something about your attitude towards others, says something about your attitude towards God, says something about your understanding of justice. And I find it a very challenging thing to think about. And we'll think a bit more about what we can do about it. But really, what I want to do is just read something from the book of Exodus. Again, a story well known. Again, this is material from Nicole's notes, who I think she got, well, I'm fairly certain she got it from Walter Brueggemann, so it's like third hand stuff by now. But I thought this was a really interesting way to think about this issue of food justice, and it's to do with our attitude towards food. So I'm going to read from Exodus 16, verses 1 to 5. And then I'm going to go to verse 17 and read to 20. So Exodus 16, 1. Moses has led them out of Egypt, and they're in the desert. They're wandering in the wilderness at this time. The whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. On the 15th day of the second month after they had come out of Egypt in the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat round pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. And you have brought us out into this desert to starve the entire assembly to death." Okay, so we'll just stop there at verse 3. That's interesting, isn't it? Is that when the Israelites want to complain about God's faithfulness, when Israelites want to complain about the fact that they've actually been set free from oppression, what do they come back to? Food. It's the food they miss. It's the food they say, oh, we're hungry now. We have plenty of food in Egypt. Let's go back to Egypt. I think that's interesting, isn't it? That food is like the thing that the Israelites complain about. Then verse 4. Then the Lord said to Moses, "I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way, I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day, they are to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days." So God says, okay, I'll provide food. You want food? I'll provide food. And he provides the story, manna from heaven. So the Israelites wake up and every morning there's this kind of honeydew flake. Sounds like a nice breakfast cereal, isn't there? Sort of over the ground, and they gather what they need. And God says, gather only what you need and don't keep any, just gather what you need for the day. So that's what they eat. And then Exodus 16, verse 17, we're told, the Israelites did as much as they were told. Some gathered much, some little. And when they had measured it by the omer, he who gathered much did not have too much, and he who gathered little did not have too little. Each one gathered as much as he needed. Then Moses said to them, No one is to keep any of it until morning. However, some of them paid no attention to Moses. They kept part of it until morning, but it was full of maggots and began to smell. So Moses was angry with them. Okay, that's what I'm going to read. They're just three quick things I'm going to pull out, because this is actually the sort of conclusion of the sermon. And I'm just going to pull out the three things that I think were from Walter Brueggemann or Nicole, a combination of the two, on this passage. And the first thing is that to acknowledge that we actually own nothing. Like, we may buy food and so on, but the food comes from somewhere else. It doesn't come from us. We don't make it. We don't produce it. And the Israelites were there in the wilderness, and they had nothing. They had to trust God to provide for them. And I think there's a reason why Jesus, when he teaches us how to pray, one of the things he teaches us to pray is, give us this day our daily bread. God, give us what we need for today, because we need to know that it comes from God, that it doesn't come from us. The food we have is a blessing. It's a gift from God. We're not necessarily entitled to it just because we're alive. We have to learn to see what we have as being given by God, as a generous gift from God. And not something that, you know, we're entitled to and we have because we, you know, we're better and other people don't have it because they're not as good as us or anything like that. We all owe nothing. We all depend on God. The second thing is that comes out of this story here in Exodus is that the Israelites share God's gift. What God has given to them, they share. They share amongst us, and they only take what they need. No one takes too much. Some take more than others because they have a bigger family or whatever, or more people to feed. That's fine. But the point is that they all have, it says, you know, no one had too much. They all had as much as they needed. And I think this is important, is that when God provides, when we trust God to provide, he will provide enough. He will provide what we need, and he will provide for, you know, as many people as there are. But the third thing I want to pull out, and it ties in with this, is that those who try to store more than they needed, we're told, well, you know, the manna went all maggoty overnight and all that. But the point is that hoarding and greed lead to rot. And this is, I think, one of the key points of all the way we think about food, is that when we, you know, eat too much, it rots us, not just physically, though it does affect us physically, but it rots us spiritually as well, because greed is essentially a statement of lack of faith or lack of trust in God. Again, Jesus teaches us to pray, give us what we need for this day. Just give us what we need for this day. But you and I, that's not enough for us. We don't want, you know, just for today. We want to know that we're taken care of next week and the week after that and well into our, you know, retirement age. We need to know that we are taken care of. And sort of this attitude of a lack of trust could express itself in our approach to food as well. And in these ways, the way we think about food reveals what we think about God. So, what can we do about this? Well, the easy thing I can say to you is, well, let's think about this. Let's think what we can do about food poverty. And again, we know about Food Bank and the work they do. And we can think about our engagement on a personal level with these. Sometimes when you go shopping, you know, you buy something and the checkout, you remember in the old days where you used to go to supermarkets? Well, sometimes I remember being asked, oh, would you like to buy something for a food bank? You could sort of, you might buy something and they say, would you like to pay an equal amount to buy another one of these? But you don't get it. It goes to food bank. And sometimes when things like that happen, our initial response is, no, it's all right, thank you. But maybe we need to stop and think before we say no to such things. And the main thing we might need to think about is our attitude towards food, because our attitude towards food reveals what we think about God. It reveals what's in our heart. It reveals what we think about justice. And as a little example, just to finish, it may seem like a small, insignificant thing, but I learned a lesson. It was about a year ago, before the pandemic and so on. I remember it was just after Christmas. I went into the supermarket one day. I had my list of things to buy, and one of the things I needed to buy was orange juice. And I remember looking at the orange juice on the shelves, and the cartons in front were, Christmas orange juice, because they had a sort of Christmas packaging on them. And I looked at them and they expired sort of in a few weeks' time. And then, but I know how supermarkets work, and I thought, no, I know how they work. They put the newer stuff at the back. So I sort of reached past these Christmas ones, and sure enough, at the back of this cabinet were boxes of orange juice without Christmas packaging. And I looked at them, and they lasted a month from when I bought it. So I thought, oh yeah, they nearly got me, but no, I'm too smart for them. And I went to get one of the boxes of orange juice at the back of the cabinet that would last longer, it wasn't Christmas, and I stopped. And I remember thinking, what am I doing? What am I saying when I do this? And you may think, well, it's no big deal. It's just, it's smart shopping or so on. But what was I saying? What I was saying was that this orange juice in the front is not good enough for me. I don't want it because it expires, it expires a couple of weeks before this other orange juice at the back. And there was no question, we'd get it drunk before it expired. I was just kind of saying, no, I want the best. I want the best orange juice. I don't want this orange juice that's going to expire in a couple of weeks. I want orange juice that's going to last a month. And I deserve it. And I want it. I don't care, if someone else has to get orange juice that I think is inferior. That was my attitude. And you may think, well, that's just ridiculous, James. But I'm saying it's not ridiculous. That reveals in me, that was my attitude. Just the act of choosing which food to buy reveals something about justice and spirituality within me. So really, I suppose the best thing I can do for you, the best piece of advice I can give you, is to just stop and think about your attitudes. What do your eating habits reveal about you and your relationship with God, and what you think about justice and food justice and other people? Because as we've been saying, justice is an attitude. It is an attitude. The actions of justice flow from having that right attitude of loving mercy and walking humbly with God. So don't think, food's just a little thing, it's not important. The little things matter. The little things, your attitude towards the little things, show your attitude towards God and others. And it shows your attitude towards justice. So think about that. Think about your relationship with food, because it reveals something about God in you and justice.